This podcast contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Creepy Cannabis Podcast, where we chat all things creepy, cannabis, true crime, paranormal, and weird. I'm Madeline.
I'm Rachel. One day, I'm going to convince Maddie that we need to record the pre-show shenanigans, because it was just a good time. You'll see on Instagram, if you're still there after we've been gone for 4 years, the fucking dust gets blown off. I'm like,
there's just nothing new on there, but...
All right, listen, guys. We are coming together. We're probably going to do back-to-back shows today. We've got coffee. We've got marijuana. Yep. We've got a strain. What is the strain?
The strain today is called Blissful Wizard. It's a hybrid strain crossed with Captain's Cookies and what? Girl Scout Cookies.
Ooh.
Girl
Scout Cookies.
It's supposed to make you very euphoric and happy. It also apparently makes you experience uncontrollable fits of laughter. So that tracks.
As I'm literally poofing it. I literally just said poof. Fuck.
It tends to have a really high THC percent, around 30-ish, which is pretty up there. And it's good for chronic pain, inflammation, fatigue, muscle spasms, tremors, and nausea.
So, fun fact I can confirm. So, I was on Zoloft for a long time, and as a result, I got these, like, tremors.
Mm-hmm.
More like, I guess, like, little, like, jerks I mm-hmm. kept getting, which can be a symptom. And even after I came off of it, I had it really bad. Even my stutter, like, got worse. I have, like, an anxious stutter, not, like, an actual, like, medical stutter, but anyway, it got worse, but I started, smoking that, because I've smoked this a couple times now, and then, the new one I got was the Snoop Dogg OG. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm gonna try it, but I can say, I don't have any of those twitches when I'm smoking it, and I do have those, like, a bunch during the day, just small ones.
Yeah,
interesting. So, we'll see. TBD, could also be my imagination, I'm one of those.
Probably not. Yeah, we're back. We missed the whole month of October, pretty much,
and November.
Most of it. Next week is December, so.
Here's the thing. We say it every time, so you guys know. Maddie has a full-time job. I don't have a full-time job. I don't have any job. But I do watch my goddaughter, and she's, a baby. She's 10 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my god. Like, I'll have free time. Yeah, that doesn't happen with a baby. Even a part-time baby.
Yeah.
As it turns out. Yeah, she got up at 4 o'clock in the morning today. For anyone who's listening who has children, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
For your loss.
Absolutely.
And I'm infertile. Mm-hmm. And there's times where I'm like, you know what? That's okay. Like, when she was cutting a tooth the last time she stayed over and woke up every 15 minutes, I was like, I'm good. So sometimes the good Lord, he knows what he's doing.
I mean,
he knows what he's doing in this instance. So, was that all on your strain? I didn't want to cut you off.
Mm-hmm.
I can confirm euphoria, which is going to make it difficult to control me. So as usual, you're going to hear Maddie probably mean mommy me several times throughout this episode. No. When I say mean mommy, it's more like, and as you were saying. So today I'm doing a very media famous story. Maddie hadn't heard of it, but Maddie's quite a bit younger than me. I'm 34. Jesus. But Jesus. This actually happened, like, when I was a baby. It was too early in the 80s. In the way back machine in 1980. And it's the dingo ate my baby, or a dingo ate my baby, or a dingo took my baby. Perhaps you've heard any of those iterations, which became, like, a really popular tagline in all those different forums. And the case that led to that was the disappearance of Azaria Chantel Loren Chamberlain. So Azaria was a 9-week-old baby girl who was born on June 11th, 1980. Which, by the way, I'm July 11th. I know. And she's a cute little baby. I looked up her pictures, too. She was a little cutie-tootie. She was born to Lindy and Michael Chamberlain. Anyway, like I said, a lot of you may have heard about this before. Some of the shows that, in pop culture that kind of really sank their teeth into that line was Seinfeld, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and The Simpsons. They all made a bunch of references to it all the time. So that's kind of how it got popular in American media. So on August 17th, 1980, Azaria was camping with her parents, and her two siblings, two brothers, in Uluru in the Northern Territory of Australia. I'm sorry in advance if I pronounce anything wrong. I really am trying.
Do you camp with a two-month-old normally?
Here's the thing. I had that thought too, but hear me out. People in Australia are just fucking built different. Look at the Hemsworths. They just be doing wild shit.
That's true.
All the time. And I genuinely do know a couple of people. My mom used to clean for a woman that was an avid hiker, and she took her infant daughter all the time. Like, rock climbing, like, not, whatever, you get the point.
I'm not saying people don't do it.
But, like,
I'm asking if it's a good idea.
Well, this turned out to not be the best idea, in fact. Hold on one moment. So, according to Lindy, the mom, she stated that at some point she heard her baby crying, which prompted her to go and check on her in the tent where she was sleeping. I read so many freaking articles, and each one gave me, like, a little snippet more of each of the events. So some things might get repetitive in the episode, but just bear with me. She said when she got to the tent, she was met by a wild dog called a dingo that appeared aggressive. It kind of, like, saw her, got, like, defensive and started growling, and then ran off. And somewhere in this is when she yelled, "A dingo ate my baby," or "A dingo took my baby," to the people that were around the, like, fire pit, like her husband, her, I think one of her kids was out, and, like, a couple random campers. Like, but it's nighttime, if I didn't say. So, you know, it's not, like, super visible, but she heard the baby. A couple other people heard the baby. She was like, "Let me go check." And then there's just this dog. Literally from that exact moment forward, the Chamberlain's life, like, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. And it just, you'll see, but, like, I don't even understand how these people recovered with, like, any kindness left in their hearts, because I'm a bitter bitch, and that would not be me. So despite there being no body, so the baby's body was never seen or retrieved, no eyewitnesses stating what I'm about to say, and no real evidence of motive to speak of at all, the Australian media immediately became critical of Lindy, and this, amongst other things that are less than circumstantial, resulted in her being tried for the murder of her daughter, who was literally eaten by a dingo. Again, none of the campers, the rangers, the trackers, the searchers, or the police who initially attended the scene, no one doubted that the baby had been taken by a dingo. There were multiple reports that that was an area where they were known to have their packs, and they had injured and killed other children before. So it wasn't
like,
"Why
are you taking your baby there?"
That was my, listen, we're not saying she was intelligent, okay? So everybody has their thing, I suppose. But the point is, it's extremely plausible that this would happen to the baby, and you have no evidence otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it goes to show the importance of speech for sure, because at one point, I believe they had polled the country of Australia where this took place, and 70% of the population believed that this woman killed her baby. And this is all based on this huge media uproar and all these random things that are coming to light that, as you'll see as we get into them, like, have no basis whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you would think that in order to put somebody on trial for murder, they would have a theory, a timeline, an idea of what's going on, but they have no evidence. So, like, in my mind, I was like, where do they even hypothesize? Like, I feel like there's never any point where someone can explain where they got this train of thought from. It was just like poof out of thin air. They were like, this sounds like what she could have done, but there was literally nothing to justify it. It was weird. Really fucking weird. It's also really an old case, so even though it was really publicized, like I said, there's a lot of various things on it. Okay, so here's the theory they came up with, okay? Mm-hmm. Right, for this woman, a mother of two children, no prior crimes against her children, no other complaints of any kind whatsoever to her character. The Crown alleged that Lindy cut Azaria's throat in the front seat of the family car, then hiding her body in a large camera case. Then, according to the reconstruction of the crime, she rejoined the group of campers around the campfire and fed one of her sons a can of baked beans before going to the tent and raising the cry that a dingo had taken the baby. It was alleged that at a later time, while other people from the campsite were searching, she disposed of the body.
And the camera case.
Mm-hmm.
Where did there even...
No, there is none, honey. Oh. No, as I said, this is a story that was pulled from the bowels of someone's dumbass body.
What the fuck?
Correct. Here's their evidence. A jumpsuit that was discovered about a week after her disappearance that was about 4 kilometers and 2.48 miles for us Americans from the tent. And it was blood-stained around the neck area, as well as a highly contentious forensic report claiming to have found evidence of, okay, stick with me, fetal hemoglobin in stains on the front seat of the Chamberlain's 1977 Holden hatchback. Fetal hemoglobin is the major hemoglobin that is present, which, by the way, hemoglobin in the blood, during gestation and can constitute 60 to 80% of total hemoglobin in infants 6 months and younger. Meaning that because this child was 9 weeks old, under 6 months, the hemoglobin made sense and confirmed that it had to have been from a baby because 60 to 80% of their blood should be made up by this fetal hemoglobin.
Hmm.
So in their mind, that's what this means. It has to be for a baby under 6 months. Oh, just you wait. Lindy was questioned about the clothes that she was wearing. She claimed that Azaria was wearing a matinee jacket over the jumpsuit, but the jacket was not present when the garments were found. So I believe they found her nappy, which is her diaper, and her jumpsuit. She was questioned about the fact that Azaria's singlet, which in America is a onesie, which was inside the jumpsuit, and it was inside out. So basically they're saying that either she had to have put it on inside out because there's no way a dingo could have removed the baby from the onesie, flipped it inside out, and it's not shredded, is what they're trying to say.
Mm.
How did this dingo, like, unpack this baby and, like, flip her onesie, but, like, it's inside of this thing? Okay, like, fine. If that's what you want to, the hill you want to die on, it's fine. And she said, obviously, like, no, I never put any singlets on my babies inside out. And she was like, I'm certain, like, I'm absolutely sure I would never do that. Like, it just didn't happen. And I can concur, like, there's never been a single fucking time I put my goddaughter's onesie on inside out and, like, not remember that I did it for a reason.
Hmm.
So the statement conflicted with the state of the garments when they were collected as evidence. According to them, I could never get any information as to what that meant. Like, they're all just up in arms over the fact that this fucking onesie's inside out inside this thing. And I get it, it's weird. But, like, it's got blood on it. So now that's why they're saying, like, oh, no, you slit her throat. But, like, I'm sorry. If they slit her throat in that onesie, the entire fucking onesie's gonna be blood-soaked, not just around the neck.
Yeah.
Okay. In her defense, so her defense team presented eyewitness evidence of dingoes having been seen in the area on the evening of August 17th, 1980. All witnesses claimed to believe the Chamberlain story. One witness, a nurse, who also reported having heard the baby's cry after the time when the prosecution had alleged that she had been murdered. So this lady was like, no, I heard her crying after that, when the mom said.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't matter. No. Evidence was also presented that adult blood also passed the test used for fetal hemoglobin, and that other organic compounds can produce similar results on that particular test. So what they're saying is the particular test that was used, other organic substances can give off the same value as this hemoglobin. So you know what that includes? mucus from the inside of their nose, and chocolate milkshakes. By the way, both of which have been present in the vehicle where she was allegedly murdered. So they had a milkshake that could have caused that. And they said both of which were present, I'm assuming, noses in the vehicle. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. Somebody sneezed up in that bitch. Maybe I'm misunderstanding. But anyway, to me, the evidence, you're supposed to be, well, it's not America, but, you know, in the mindset of innocent until proven guilty, like, you'd think you'd have to have, I don't know, a shred of actual evidence.
Something.
There was also an engineer, Les Harris, who had conducted dingo research for over a decade. And he said that contrary to the findings of the prosecutor, a dingo's carnassial teeth can shear through materials as tough as motor vehicle seat belts. He also cited an example of a captive female dingo removing a bundle of meat from its wrapping paper and leaving the paper intact. So he basically was trying to say it's completely plausible that these wild animals would be able to strip the onesie off the baby because they've been literally observed stripping things off of meat and not injuring it, not mm-hmm. shredding it or ripping it. They just open it and take it. So he was like, yeah, like, I'm showing you. They're not dumb.
Yeah.
You know, they know how to do it. So, let's see. Sorry, I lost my place. But anyway, and also, yes, evidence that they are strong enough to kill and eat a child because of the strength of their ability to shred through nylon seatbelts.
A baby.
Correct. Like this? So, another camper, Sally Lowe, and Michael Chamberlain, Azaria's dad, gave evidence that they had heard a baby cry at a time when, oh my god, when Lindy was with them at the barbecue area and Azaria was believed to be in the family tent. Witness Judith West, who was camped 30 meters or 98 feet away, testified to hearing a dog's low, throaty growl coming from that direction, a sound that she associated with growls her husband's dog made when he was slaughtering sheep, because that was, he was doing it every day, and mm-hmm. she was like, I know what a fucking growling dog sounds like, I'm not an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough for them. Mm-mm. Chamberlain, so the dad gave evidence that in response to others hearing, oh, I'm sorry, Lindy Chamberlain gave evidence that in response to hearing others hearing Azaria's cry, she went to the tent. So, like, she heard it, others heard it, and she was like, oh, I need to go to the tent, like, she's crying. What she says, this is her actual account. Halfway to the tent, she thought she saw a dingo emerging from the tent, like, getting stuck and having difficulty and shaking its head like it was stuck trying to get out of the tent. But she couldn't see its face, like, all the way. It was kind of obstructed, it's dark, and, like, the angle and stuff. So anyway, she thinks she sees it, but she doesn't really think much of it because she's like, whatever, it's dark, it could be anything.
All right.
But she's still going that way. Like, she's already walking that way, but she's
That's
like,
just something I can't, like...
Listen.
Listen, I'm not really sure, but it looks like something's coming out of my the tent in which my two-month-old baby is, but I'm not really sure. I'm just gonna...
Well, she's already... Fine. Well, she's already there. Like, she's, like, all... She's observing this... She's just saying what she observed as she's coming up on it. So, whatever. So, she said... at this point, when she saw it, though, she thought it had the baby. She thought it was shaking its head because it had the baby. So she started screaming for her husband, Michael, Michael, the dingo's got my baby. And then she ran in the tent because her son was in the tent as well. And so she ran in the tent to see, she just thought it might have had the baby just because she saw it. And she was like, I don't know. And like, by the time she processed everything, she's like, okay, fuck, let me go in the tent and see if my other kid's okay. So... she goes in, her other kid's there, seemingly unscathed, but the baby's missing. At that point, she does run out of the tent, and she starts chasing in the direction that she thought it had gone. But then the other article said that she encountered, like, one in there. So I could not get, like, a clear... That's the only thing I couldn't get, like, clear information on. It's like... Mm-hmm. And I read multiple articles, and multiple said half, and the others said half. So it was really weird. But either way, I mean... It's fucking middle of the night. Your baby just got potentially eaten by a dog. Like, okay, maybe you're just... Whatever. So, she called her husband for a light of some sort. And she's running in the fucking dark trying to find her baby. So, police detective Sergeant John Lincoln submitted evidence that he took photographs of large paw prints a few centimeters from Azaria's cot and found what was probably blood outside the tent. He collected samples, but they weren't tested. So the actual police officer was like, oh, yeah, here's the dog prints to corroborate her story and the blood. And they were like, mm-hmm, we don't need that. Yeah. Lowe also gave evidence that she had brought Reagan out of the tent after the occurrence, which was the one of her sons. That she was, when she was in the tent, she observed a pool of blood in the tent, which was about 15 centimeters by 10 centimeters or 6 by 4 inches. However, the amount of blood was disputed. Another witness who entered the tent that night, which was Police Constable Frank Morris, gave evidence that there were only a few drops of blood on a couple of blankets and a sleeping bag in the tent. So there were some discrepancies in a few things, but at no point, like Sean always says, you have to have like a common sense law. The common sense that says this woman just literally experienced her child getting eaten by a fucking dog.
Yeah.
Maybe she's a little fuzzy on some of her trauma. Give her a minute. Like, give her a second. There was a scientific witness who did locate blood on the wall of the tent as well. Scientist Dr. Andrew Scott agreed that the spray mark of blood was consistent with a dingo carrying a bleeding baby.
Ah.
However, so this and shaking a baby.
Remember anything? Or what?
I could never find anything touched on it. I don't know if he stayed asleep. I don't know. Or just, like, was too little. However, he did not believe that it was human blood. So I guess could have been blood from one of the animals. And then canine hairs were found in the tent and on Azaria's jumpsuit they found, and they didn't own a dog. So, sorry. So we have all this evidence that she didn't do it, but let's see. Let's see how it shakes out. And then the same, remember Les Harris that I was talking about earlier, the Dingo Foundation guy?
Mm-hmm.
He submitted additional evidence that based on years of studying dingoes, that a dingo could have enveloped the head of a baby in its mouth and carried the weight of the baby over a long distance. It could explain why there wasn't so much blood found in certain areas, why the clothes maybe weren't shredded and torn the way that they would have expected. He produced photographs of dingoes enveloping the head of a baby-sized doll in its jaws. However, forensic expert James Cameron gave evidence that based on studying plaster casts of dingoes' jaws, it was impossible for a dingo to open its mouth wide enough to encompass a child's head. So he gave scientific evidence based on an impression. The other guy gave you a video of it physically doing what he said it could do. But who am I to judge? There was a tourist, Max Whitaker, who gave evidence that he attended a search later on the night of the disappearance with people including the head ranger and an Aboriginal tracker. He claimed to have been called by the head ranger to help him and the Aboriginal tracker to follow dingo paw prints and scrape marks in the sand in a westerly direction. He was led to believe they were following the trail of a dingo carrying a heavy object believed to be her body. I know now that the Aboriginal's account of following these tracks west that night has been denied by rangers, and the Aboriginal's account of this incident has not been accepted. So basically, a tourist said that this happened, but then the ranger said that there were no Aboriginal assistants. So who knows, because I saw some other articles that was concrete that they were there. So it sounds like this whole thing was just like a chaotic 80s fucking disaster. Anyway, so obviously, expert opinion varied as to whether the clothes damage could have been caused by a dingo versus, you know, her being stuffed into this case and disposed of. But that's the other thing. There were marks on her diaper that were similar to marks resulting from a dingo on another diaper that was used for testing purposes. Azaria's clothing were found only 30 meters or 98 feet from a dingo's den, although no one, including the chief ranger and his deputy, were aware of the den at the time. So
they didn't look.
Correct. Well, they're all fucking doing this at nighttime, and they're like, oh, nope, it must have been. Well, but she slit her throat,
I don't
so
see anything.
There's no point looking for the wild dingoes that are literally howling right next to you over there singing fucking kumbaya.
Like, they don't care at all.
The defense's case was rejected by the jury, and Lindy Chamberlain was convicted of murder on October 29th, 1982, and sentenced to life in prison. And then Michael, her husband, was found guilty as an accessory after the fact because he must have helped her dispose of the body because a woman couldn't do it on her own. She needed her man. And he got 18 months, but a suspended sentence. There was an unsuccessful appeal to the federal court in April of 1983. Subsequently, the High Court of Australia was asked to quash the convictions on the ground that the verdicts were unsafe and unsatisfactory. However, in February of 1984, the court refused the appeal by majority. Because they were like, we already fucked this lady's life over, might as well stick to it. Mm-hmm. So, I just want you guys to, like, take a walk down memory lane with me, right? Imagine you're Lindy. You have two children who need their mom and their dad. The system is convicting both parents. You don't know if your husband's gonna... Yes, he got that suspended sentence, which probably had to do with the fact that the kids needed a parent. And you're literally going to go to jail for life for literally less than circumstantial evidence.
That's outrageous.
Low-key, I was like, are you sure this didn't happen in the U.S.? Or... Mm-hmm. That's how it had me feeling. I was like, ooh, let me take a double look.
This is giving me U.S.
vibes. This is giving me major U.S. vibes. So, literally, for those of you who do not believe in divine intervention, let me let you know. Someone in the ethos was like, Lindy, baby, you've been through enough.
Yeah.
you've been through enough, honey. Unfortunately, in early 1986, there was a British tourist named David Brett, who very sadly did fall to his death from Uluru, where they had been camping, during an evening climb. Because of the size of the rock and the terrain and whatever, it was 8 days before his remains were discovered. And they were laying below the bluff where he lost his footing and in an area that was full of dingo lairs. As they searched the area, you know, we're going to collect everything from his situation, they discovered Azaria's missing matinee jacket. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right outside the dingo lair. Yes. Okay. Correct. Okay. Correct. So that's the one, like, they didn't know that lair was there. Yada yada.
Mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory ordered Lindy Chamberlain's immediate release, like, instantaneous, and the case was reopened. So, on... Wait. Sorry, I'm high, guys. And when I tell you that this blissful wizard does make a bitch blissful as fuck, I am so fucking blissful, I lost my spot and was like, it's not that serious. It's fine. Not that serious. So, wait. No. This happened in 86. On September 15th, 1988, I was only 9 weeks old by that time, which is weird. The Northern Territory Court of Criminal Appeals unanimously overturned all convictions against Lindy and Michael Chamberlain.
Wow.
2 years later, so wow. That's cool. And just wait till your kids go to college and then let her out, you know? The questionable nature of the forensic evidence in the Chamberlain trial and the weight given to it raised concerns about such procedures and about expert testimony in criminal cases. The prosecution had successfully argued that the pivotal hemoglobin test indicated the presence of fetal hemoglobin in the Chamberlain's car, and it was a significant factor in the original conviction. But it was later shown that these tests were highly unreliable and that similar tests conducted on a sound deadener sprayed on during the manufacture of... There was a sound deadener sprayed during the manufacturing of the vehicle that could yield identical results. So essentially did no research as to, yes, this test can mean this, but it can also have 80 other interpretations.
Okay.
Not that they cared. So 2 years after they were exonerated, they were awarded $1.3 million for wrongful imprisonment, which sounds like decent for the 80s. Yeah, that covered less than one third of their legal expenses.
Oh.
Yeah. So now your baby's dead. Your children probably hate you because you missed their life for... Everyone telling them you murdered their sister.
Love that.
Yeah, you were literally going to die in crippling debt, most likely, because of your legal fees that you can barely pay back. But don't worry, they gave you some chump change for it.
Love that.
It's a vibe.
Can you do a further civil case for, like, loss?
I think that was from their civil case. But it, honestly, it never could clarify. Like, I couldn't find either way. It just said they were awarded it. I could not find anything on like that. If it was like any type of actual trial or just like a, oh, we're so sorry, here's this. Oh, sorry, I'm so congested. In December of 2011, Elizabeth Morris, who was then one of the Northern Territory coroners, announced that a fourth inquest would be held in February of 2012. On June 12, 2012, at a fourth inquest into the disappearance of Azaria Chamberlain, Morris ruled that a dingo was responsible for her death in 1980. She made the finding in the light of subsequent reports of dingo attacks on humans causing injury and even death. She stated Azaria Chamberlain died at Uluru on 17 August 1980. The cause of her death was as a result of being attacked and taken by a dingo. She subsequently offered her condolences to the parents and siblings of Azaria Chamberlain on the death of their special and dearly loved daughter and sister, and stated that a new death certificate with the cause of death had been registered. So this was well after. This lady had nothing to do with it, but she's like amending the report so they can at least have a death certificate that doesn't say murder, that says that like she died of something else. Because that, like, one thing I can confirm, because, you know, I've gone through a lot of mourning for my fertility, like, little things like that do matter. Mm-hmm. So that probably was very, like, a sincere apology from someone who has nothing to do with it, you know? Since the Chamberlain case, proven cases of attacks on humans by dingoes have been discussed in the public domain. In particular, dingo attacks on Fraser Island, which is off the Queensland coast. It's the last refuge in Australia for isolated, purebred, wild dingoes. In the wake of these attacks, it emerged that there had been at least 400 documented dingo attacks on Fraser Island. Most were against children, but at least two were on adults. For example, in April 1998, a 13-month-old girl was attacked by a dingo and dragged for about 1 meter, which is 3 feet, from a picnic blanket at the Waddy Point camping area, and she was dropped only when her father intervened and scared the dog away.
Great.
In July of 2004, Frank Cole, who was a Melbourne pensioner, claimed that he had shot a dingo in 1980 and found a baby in its mouth, but you didn't do anything with that. After interviewing Cole on the matter, police decided not to reopen the case. He claimed to have the ribbons from the jacket, which Azaria had been wearing when she disappeared, as proof, but Lindy said that the jacket had no ribbons and he was just seeking attention. His credibility was further damaged when it was revealed he had made unsubstantiated claims about another case as well.
Love that for him.
But also, you're a dumbass. So you just saw a wild dog with a baby, scared it away, and just like, what, left the baby there?
Literally.
Cool, bro. Cool. In August 2005, there was a 25-year-old woman named Erin Horsberg, and she claimed that she was Azaria Chamberlain, but her claims were rejected by authorities and the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Media Watch Program, which stated that none of the reports linking her to the Chamberlain case had any substance. People are just weird the way they want to come out of the woodwork for shit. Sadly, Michael Chamberlain did die of leukemia on January 9th, 2007, but he was 72 years old, so he did live a very long life. And from all accounts I could tell, they stayed together. The National Museum of Australia has in its collection more than 250 items related to the disappearance of Azaria Chamberlain, which Lindy has actually helped document, because obviously, like, they get funds for causes and things like that, so she wanted to be helpful. So items include courtroom sketches by artists and camping equipment, a piece of the dashboard from their car, outfits she wore, the number from her prison door, the black dress her daughter was wearing. I didn't get into it in here, but a bunch of people said that because they were from the Seventh Advent Church and the daughter was wearing a black dress, they must have been trying to sacrifice her. It was so fucking dumb that I was like, okay. So the National Library of Australia has... Australia has a small collection of items relating to Azaria, such as her birth records, as well as a manuscript collection, which includes like 20,000 documents of like correspondence, letters from the general public. The actual car was sold to the museum at some point later, so they really did contribute a lot. I know I did briefly touch on the pop culture and like media impact, but just to take a little bit of a closer look, because it was a... this happened 8 years before I was born, and I remember being, like, not able to not hear about it, even as I was older. mm-hmm. like a preteen. I want to say, oh no, what have I done? I want to say that there was like an, I feel like there was an X-Files episode on it actually. And that's what like resurged it in my time. I have to look into that. I think that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so it's been the death of Azaria has been the subject of a bunch of books, films, television shows, other publications. There was a book called Evil Angels that was published in 85. It was adapted by Australian film director Fred Schapese into a 1988 feature film. What I found cool about this was it starred Meryl Streep and Sam Neill. He's from Jurassic Park,
mm-hmm.
like, as the parents. And it gave Meryl Streep her 8th Academy Award nomination and her first AFI award.
Mm.
In 2002, Lindy, which was an opera by Moya Henderson, was produced by Opera Australia at the Sydney Opera House. There was a dramatized television miniseries called Through My Eyes, which was based on Lindy's book of the same name. And why did my brain just shut down? Sorry. There are podcasts. I think actually Killer Queen's podcast, episode 180, I think they did this case. I didn't listen to it. Anytime I'm doing like an episode on something, if I haven't already heard another podcast or do it, I never look it up because I don't want it to like sound
mm-hmm.
or be formatted how theirs was. That's probably stupid because like there's only so many ways to tell a story, but I like the Killer Queens podcast, but I've never listened to it on there. And then Ashley Flowers from Crime mm-hmm. Junkie, she covered it on International Infamy.
Mm.
Yeah. And now us, Creepy Cannabis. Episode what? Well, it's an episode. That's for sure. It's
an episode, for sure.
That we can tell you for sure. Okay. So, as the U.S. likes to do, we transmuted it from tragedy to morbid comedy for our television shows, like I mentioned. It became super embedded in American pop culture with phrases such as, a dingo's got my baby, serving as a punchline, you probably remember hearing before you even knew what the fuck a dingo was. Lindy Chaplin's release from jail is a significant event in episode 3 of The Newsreader. And in the 1998 animated film The Rugrats Movie, a reporter makes a reference to the case by saying, is it true a dingo ate your baby? What does that need to be in The Rugrats for? I love that. I love Rugrats. Always trying to take our kid shows and ruin it. And then there was an Australian puppet comedian, Randy Feltface. I find it really weird that he's like a puppet comedian and his last name is literally Feltface.
Wow.
But it's fine. And he referenced it in his 2021 live show, Purple Privilege, where he claimed he was born on the day Lindy Chamberlain's baby was eaten by a dingo.
Okay.
So just to take a little recap before we end it here. This woman lost her infant child and had to process the fact that she was eaten by a fucking wild dog. The last thing this lady hears is her daughter crying as she's being taken, later knowing that cry was her literally being eaten. Then she had to revisit every single detail over and over again in her trial while having to worry about who would take care of her fucking kids if her and her husband both go to jail. She's finally released by happenstance and then has to endure a lifetime of movies and shows which frankly do not show the same respect for the life and death of an infant child that I wouldn't necessarily want to do. She gets some money, barely enough to cover her fees. And all for what? Because it was more entertaining in the media if this innocent woman slit her baby's throat than the fact that it just was an accident. And a wild dog just accidentally thought it was prey. And, you know, that's the thing, people. I hate to always be preaching, but, you know, your words carry weight. And the media carries influence. And people are responsible to do better. So, just make sure you're questioning the status quo sometimes, okay? Like, sometimes a dingo just really does take the baby. And it would suck. But, like, also, why the fuck were you camping with the dingoes?
What, literally, where the dingoes eat babies.
It's like, and I get it. You can't, because, like, there are people that go to the zoo and, like, their kids fall in, and it's like, it takes a second.
I don't get that.
But I don't, like, I don't know, because I'm a helicopter person.
There's a lot of obstacles before you reach the end
of the when Raylan's running around, that's my goddaughter, if I've never said her name. It's Raylan. And I'm not like a helicopter. Like, she can have fun, but, like, you do not need to be anywhere without me. You're mm-hmm. a child. Mm-hmm. Like, where do you have to go? What do you have them legs for? Where are you going?
What are you doing?
Where are you walking? And then she'll be like, bye-bye, gaga. And I'm like, shut the fuck up speaking to me like that. Just kidding. I love her so much. That's all I have to say on this matter.
Okay.
So, yeah, the case that captivated a nation with no evidence whatsoever. And turns out they wasted everyone's time and money.
They really did. They really did.
So, we'll see you back in 4 minutes for the next episode. We'll act brand new, don't worry.
Bye.
Bye.